Washing your dishes before you wash your dishes? Dirty Labs believes going green in the kitchen should not mean doing extra work. Their bioenzyme dishwasher detergent cuts through stuck on food and leaves dishes sparkling, without compromising on safety or performance. No pre-rinse, no post-rinse, no compromise. Just powerful cleaning made without harsh chemicals. If Dirty Labs can't make you believe in the power of green cleaning, nothing will. Fall in love, or it's free, at dirtylabs.com.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Schultzy sitting in with you for a best of edition of Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. The Fan Golf Classic happening at Langdon Farms right now. Thank you so much to all you listeners for selling out the morning and afternoon rounds. A busy day for y'all to go hang out with all of our personalities here at 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. So excited to have you at least maybe on the course and listening as well, or on the course today with all of our hosts. And what a day for all the hosts to be gone. Giannis Antetokounmpo on the move officially on the eve of the NBA draft. I was saying it last hour. It's always a mixed bag when you got the NBA draft. Sometimes it's just quiet as hell leading up to and during the draft. I feel like especially when you're like hoping for big moves and expecting a lot of big moves, they just don't happen. And then on a year like this, I know we're expecting Giannis to be moved, but all of a sudden, just a cavalcade of news. We've got a couple of other trades happening the last couple of days. We've got some announcements for signings. Trae Young staying with the Wizards. Adeyemi staying with the Timberwolves. Like, all of this news starting to happen, and the Portland Trail Blazers not involved in any of it. So we will stay monitoring the social media lines and anything on the internet as far as Blazers news. If we see something drop, we will let you guys know. Dirt and Sprague have the ability to chime in live from Langdon Farms today down at the Fan Golf Classic. So we are keeping an eye on things. No Blazers hire at head coach yet. No trade. Of course, the Giannis Antetokounmpo trade with the Miami Heat was a one-for-one. There was no facilitator, so no Blazers trade in there to get Jaylen Brown or anything like that. Obviously, the Celtics not involved in this deal either. So, like I said, we'll keep an eye on any news that happens with the Blazers this morning. But this best of edition continues here on Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Next up, we've got Adam Rittenberg, a nice interview they did with the senior writer of college football for ESPN.
What in the world is going on in Lubbock, Texas? How is the Big 12 going to respond to this? And does Adam Rittenberg view this as another like speed bump in the road of college football, which we've certainly had a lot of, but we get over it and the ride continues? Or is this genuinely a, oh my God, that's a lightning rod, you know, curve in the road moment where the sport was one way and now it's another way?
Yeah, good to be with you guys. I do think it's a big moment, but in the same vein, it's one that we could be looking back at in a few months and saying, well, you know, nothing ended up happening. The Big 12 didn't sanction Texas Tech. The appeal of the NCAA to the injunction was denied. And let's start breaking down how Brennan Sursby is going to help Texas Tech repeat as Big 12 champion. I mean, that's a very real possibility, you know, given what happened earlier this week. I do think it's maybe most interesting to look at this on the parallel track of what's happening in Washington with the conversation about the bill that was introduced by the two senators, Cruz and Cantwell, which is, you know, that conversation is continuing. And it, you know, it does help in some weird way to have an event like this to really get people's attention that maybe weren't as locked in on college football and all of its challenges like the three of us, and say, hey, we really need to get this moving to try to get to the finish line to allow the sport to govern itself better than it currently is. Where it ultimately goes with Sorsby, you know, it's hard to forecast that. I did not think even in the state where you have friendly judges and certainly judges that are influenced by certain schools, that he would get this injunction, but he did. And now, you know, Texas Tech, which it made very clear last night on its extensive video that it put out, you know, they are fully supportive of Sorsby, you know, dealing with what he's got to deal with, but also getting to the point where he can help this team in 2026.
Do you like the legislation they're proposing with Cantwell and Cruz? Do you like the Save, you know, Protect College Sports Act?
I like certain elements of it for sure. I really think the biggest thing is, you know, sort of this antitrust protection to avoid what we've, I mean, again, what's essentially happened here is that, you know, you went from a sport that was too controlled by the coaches and the schools to a sport that's now almost completely controlled by the players, their attorneys, and their agents. And that's not a sustainable model. You can't have a sport where you basically turned it over to those on the field and those that are representing them, because it's so individualized. There's no collective. There's no standards that we all abide by. Everybody kind of just does what they want, and it becomes an all politics is local situation where if you're unhappy, you just find a judge and then makes you happy. It's not a sustainable way to operate. And so I think that's an important element. I think having you know, some type of limitations around transferring can be beneficial. You know, some type of standardization with agents and certification. You know, ultimately, the sport needs collective bargaining. It's pretty clear at this point. Will those schools and the NCAA ultimately go forward with that, or will we have some type of separation where you know, the bigger conferences or whoever it is decide, you know, this is the only way we can go forward? Because again, if you have collective bargaining and you have the clear rules that the player side and the school side agrees on, then, you know, a rule is a rule. Right now, we don't have anything really that is enforceable, as was shown this week, and that's why there's such consternation and outcry about this injunction.
Yeah, we're talking with Adam Rittenberg of ESPN, senior college football writer for ESPN, at ESPN Rittenberg on Twitter. It also just kind of sums up everything that sucks about it, because I think we're in tune for an awesome college football season. I'm going to get to your rankings about, you know, future programs and where everybody kind of stacks up and all of that. And what is the thing that is dominating the headlines in the offseason? The idea about, you know, antitrust and can this guy who gambled on his own team continue to play because a judge in Lubbock, Texas said that he could. So to that point, Adam, I'm going to ask you. You got your rankings out. ESPN.com, you tweeted them out as well. Future college football rankings over the next 2 years. You have a new number one. So for our audience who has, I'm just curious, what is the criteria that goes into kind of ranking this? And what was it about your new number one that made you put them number one?
Right. So yeah, this has been an interesting process. I've done this for more than 10 years. So I started doing this, and it was a 3-year projection, you know, before the portal, before there was such a widespread player movement. And you could really look at a team and say, okay, you know, they've got a quarterback in place for the next couple of years. They're really doing well at their high school recruiting. They're not losing a lot of coaches. And so now you really look at everything. You look at how they're doing from a portal perspective, high school recruiting. I really place an emphasis on offensive and defensive line outlook. Are you a team that has a number of underclassmen on your lines of scrimmage that are able to come back for multiple years, or you just have a track record of being able to reload on the O-line and D-line? How are you with staff retention? Are you a team that loses your coaches year after year, or do you keep them together, much like Indiana has in each of the last 2 years? And it's really tricky, right? It's really hard to forecast, you know, beyond this season. But, you know, I think that, you know, again, if this was a 1-year projection, you know, talking to you guys, Oregon would be higher than number four. But I think the reason I had Notre Dame up top is because their overall trajectory from high school recruiting, way better than under Marcus Freeman than it was under Brian Kelly. They finally developed their own quarterback instead of going to the portal every year in CJ Carr, who may go on to the NFL next year, but may come back for another year at Notre Dame. Wouldn't shock me if he did. They're an elite offensive line and defensive line program. They only took 7 transfers this year in the portal, but 5 of them are considered blue chip transfers, according to our research team. So that's by far the best percentage in college, among the Power Four in college football. And, you know, the wild card here is Marcus Freeman. If he goes to the NFL in a year, Notre Dame's outlook becomes very murky, and they're certainly not number one in next year's power rankings. But for now, we're assuming he will be there multiple years. And that's why, again, Notre Dame gets the edge. It was really down to Notre Dame and Ohio State for me. Could certainly have gone with the Buckeyes. But actually, the O-line and D-line play, for me, put Notre Dame over the top.
You know what's interesting is right now, Adam, there seems to be a wave of, not that coaches don't relocate, but like Dan Lanning's pretty loyal to Oregon. Look, all these coaches say what they say publicly. We know they live in different worlds privately, but he's been pretty open about like, I have the best gig. I don't need to go anywhere else. We can do it here. Freeman's got a great setup at Ohio State. Notre Dame, excuse me. I'm just curious of some of these young coaches. You mentioned Freeman in the NFL. What do you hear about some of these guys in terms of you would pick one of them to say if they left college football, it would be for the NFL versus leaving for another program?
Right. I actually think those two are really good examples. I don't think Dan Lanning and Marcus Freeman are going to leave for other college jobs. I guess with Marcus, the unknown is Ohio State because he played there and he's from there, from the state of Ohio. But, you know, again, given where Notre Dame is and Ohio State is, I don't think it's a huge gap like there had been for years and years. And that's not a knock against Ohio State. It's really a credit to what Notre Dame has done and what Marcus has done. And so I do think Marcus Freeman will be an NFL head coach. He's young enough. He can go do it. He can succeed and stay, or he can fail. He can come back and pretty much take any college job he wants. And then with Dan, you know, I think he's been very clear that he's not looking to leave Oregon. You know, if the Kansas City Chiefs come open, that might be the one. But he's also very much in play. So it's why Oregon will not be slipping down these rankings, I don't think, anytime soon, and more than likely will be moving up rather than down in the future because of Dan and because of the type of program that he's established there. But yeah, I think those are two really good examples of young, successful college coaches who I don't think are leaving for other college jobs, but you know, could end up going to the NFL at some point.
Yeah, we're talking with Adam Rittenberg of ESPN, at ESPN Rittenberg on Twitter, senior college football writer for ESPN, going over his future outlook rankings, future power rankings through 2027 in college football. You can find that at ESPN.com and also on his Twitter account. There is something that's one of the interesting teams that I find, and I was like, the first thing that I kind of looked at was one, like, where's Oregon going to be? I'm just curious. In lists like this, where people around the country have them ranked. The other one was Indiana, because yeah, you had Kurt Cignetti in year one turn Indiana into a respectable program, right, to win 10 games. Oh my God, that's incredible. They hadn't done that forever. And you had them ranked 20th last year. They then win the national championship. They go undefeated, the undisputed best team in the sport all season long. And you had them ranked number 7. And I was just curious of that, of like, because I'm also looking at this year and wondering, I know they're going to be good. Is it the Indiana of 2 years ago good? Are they a national title? Like, are they at the Ohio State level of like that year in and year out? They're a championship contender, because I do think there's a gap there and a tier there where you could be good in a one-off where everything comes together, as opposed to the doing it year in and year out. You're one of the best teams in the sport. Why number 7 for Indiana, and what more evidence do you need in order to move them up higher on a list like this?
Right. Yeah, they're a tricky team to rank, right? Because, again, they were the best team in the country last year. There was no doubt about it. Look at who they beat. Look at how they beat them. And they could certainly do it again. Now, they lost a lot of really good players to the NFL. And they lost a number of players who had been with Kurt Cignetti and that staff at multiple spots. But this team has done everything it can to sustain its place among programs that have for years recruited at a higher level, spent more money on their coaching staff, on their players. They did really well in the portal again. You know, able to get, you know, Josh Hoover as a successor to Fernando Mendoza, the Heisman Trophy winner. They're able to land a guy like Nick Marsh, who Notre Dame wanted, the wide receiver from Michigan State, able to help their defensive line, which lost some good players to the NFL. I really like their O-line and D-line outlook. And so, you know, why are they 7 and not 1? They're still not recruiting anywhere near where Oregon and Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Georgia's, again, probably the most dominant recruiting operation year in and year out in college football, high school recruiting. And so that's probably where it needs to still elevate. But hey, if they can continue to fill holes in the portal and develop players, I mean, there's still a number of guys, if you look at their 2-deep, especially those that held over from the previous staff, that are really good players, but were not high-level recruits. And so that's what still is the next step there. But Indiana, you give them credit. They have done everything they can to give Sig a chance to keep this rolling, even though they are not like the others. I mean, yes, last year they won a national championship, but if you were to compare the history, how the programs are constructed, where they recruit from, and so forth, they're still an outlier in this group of the other top 10 teams. Those other top 10 teams, for the most part, are always going to be hovering around the top 10. Indiana is the one that has burst in here. And shoot, if they can follow it up with another playoff appearance, they're likely going to rise even further in next year's FPR.
The one thing we've talked about, despite, you know, all the circus around the sport with Sorsby and whatnot, is the fourth in the conference. And what we mean by that is, when you look at the Big Ten, it is a team like you just mentioned and talked about, Indiana. It is Ohio State. Obviously, they're going nowhere. Oregon appears to not be moving. So we know, like, going into the season, our minds might be saying, there's three. Who is the fourth in the Big Ten for you this season? We know USC has a quarterback coming back this year, and Lincoln Riley's talking about, now we have to be a playoff team. We know Michigan went the more kind of mature adult route of, like, let's get our culture and our program back. Let's go Whittingham. We know Penn State hired Matt Campbell. When you look at the Big Ten, who is the fourth team in the Big Ten, according to Adam Rittenberg?
Yeah, it's probably one of those three, and I'm less bullish on Michigan just because I need to see it. I need to see how their passing game is. Their passing game has been really bad the last 2 years since they won the national championship back in 2023. Jason Beck is a really good offensive coordinator, but he's known more as a run-first guy. I mean, Utah had a top-five offense last year running the ball. You know, Michigan's going to run the ball. It may not matter if they can't throw the ball at a much higher rate. Penn State, to me, is really interesting, guys, because, you know, it's essentially Iowa State's roster with a few of the Penn State guys mixed in. Matt Campbell's a heck of a coach. Their schedule is quite favorable for year one, but I just don't know if they're a playoff team. Like, at the end of the day, USC's the one. Like, USC's the one I really want to like. And there's a lot of evidence that since they've been in the Big Ten, or since Lincoln has got there, rather, to suggest, oh, don't buy into USC. You know, they're going to blow it. Their schedule's really tough. But you look at their quarterback, who's excellent. One of the high QBR leaders last year, in Jaden Maiava. You know, they'll find receivers. I'm not worried about that. Two really good running backs coming back. And then again, I'm a big line of scrimmage guy. Look at their offensive line. Everybody's coming back. Look at their defensive line. They didn't have to go out and get a bunch of transfers. This feels like a team that at least was built the right way to then take the next step. Now they've actually got to do it. And they've got to defend their home turf, where they have, Oregon and Ohio State coming in. They've got to go to Penn State. It's a really challenging schedule, even without Notre Dame. And USC's got to deliver. So, you know, if it's not one of them, you can never write off Iowa. Iowa was really close to making the playoff last year. I know people don't want to hear that, but they really were. Oregon fans can attest, given how difficult that game was to win on the road. You know, maybe it's Iowa, maybe it's Washington rising up, maybe it's somebody that we're not really talking about. But USC, to me, is the most interesting fourth team in the Big Ten, because you can certainly make a case based on their roster and their quarterback and even their head coach. I mean, Lincoln Riley told me this recently. It's not like he's forgotten what a playoff team looks like. The guy had playoff teams every year at Oklahoma, pretty much. And even though it hasn't gone well at USC, he still understands the ingredients it takes to get to that level.
Well, don't you know, Adam, they also have an AI coach now, right? They got a new AI guy on their staff. That's all we need right now to help put us over the top. Let me ask you this, because I do think you're hinting at something that makes the Big Ten really interesting, and that is, we know how top-heavy it is. There's been so many years where it's like, well, who's that next team from the middle of the pack? And really none of them have done it. I mean, Indiana, I should be fair. Indiana going from where they were to being at the top is obviously great. But then I feel like there's these same kind of, Nebraska, is this the year? 7-5. USC, here we go, 9-3. If I give you over or under 3.5 Big Ten teams in the playoff next year, would you take the over or the under?
I would probably take the over. I actually am pretty encouraged by the overall depth of the league, the fact that we're having these conversations. It'd be very surprising if, like, you know, Penn State's one of those teams, for example. Like, you can make a case for Penn State to make the playoff, even if they aren't that great of a team because of their schedule.
Yeah.
Like, they can get to 10 wins. Like, and the 10 wins in the Big Ten is getting you in the playoff. And so whether it's that, whether it's USC, you know, winning some big games at home, I think Ohio State is going to be fascinating this year because of how difficult their schedule is. You know, they could be a team that we're looking at 9-3, and maybe the only Big Ten team that you could look at 9-3 and say, you know what, they still have to make the playoff somehow. So I think it'll be four. But it could be three. I'd be surprised if it's less than three. I think it's probably three or four. I don't think the Big Ten is necessarily getting five or six teams or something like that crazy into the playoff. But again, who knows at Michigan? Maybe Kyle gets it right in year one and gets the most out of Bryce Underwood, and they beat Oklahoma in week two, and then they're off to a special season because they certainly have the talent level and the coaching to get there. But I think it's going to be four with maybe Penn State as the fourth.
It felt great to talk actual football and not about can you gamble on your team. Should the Big 12 ban Texas Tech? It just we got a lot of issues in the sport right now. It feels good to talk about the actual sport. That's why the article was fun to read. Go check out his future power rankings, ESPN.com. He is senior college football writer for ESPN, Adam Rittenberg, at ESPN Rittenberg on Twitter. We always appreciate the time. Hope the offseason is treating you well. Let's do it again soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, great college football talk with Dirt and Sprague, having Adam Rittenberg from ESPN, senior college football writer, joining them. We're actually going to stick with the college football theme for the rest of the hour. ESPN's Bill Connolly coming up for a couple of segments in this best of edition of Dirt and Sprague, as the guys, along with the rest of the personalities at 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network, are at Langdon Farms for the Fan Golf Classic. So we're going to take it out to break, come back with some more college football talk. And of course, we are watching the NBA news wires. Is anything going to happen regarding the Portland Trail Blazers today? Will they hire a head coach? Will they be involved in a trade, a Jaylen Brown to Portland trade? Honestly, a lot less likely, or almost no chance of happening now, unfortunately, since the Blazers are not going to be a facilitator in that Giannis Antetokounmpo trade. If you missed it, he is on the move to the Miami Heat, and we will spend just a tiny bit of time. There was a great article from Sports Illustrated talking about why this trade actually helps the Blazers' draft picks, and they honestly could be the biggest winners out of everybody in this trade just because of value coming up with their pick swaps that they have with Milwaukee, and then the draft picks that they have that used to be Milwaukee's and Boston's as well. So that and more college football talk on the Best of Edition with Dirt and Sprague, Bill Connolly, and a segment that they did with them coming up here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network.
Washing your dishes before you wash your dishes? Dirty Labs believes going green in the kitchen should not mean doing extra work. Their bioenzyme dishwasher detergent cuts through stuck-on food and leaves dishes sparkling without compromising on safety or performance. No pre-rinse, no post-rinse, no compromise. Just powerful cleaning made without harsh chemicals. If Dirty Labs can't make you believe in the power of green cleaning, nothing will. Head to DirtyLabs.com and use code PODCAST to get 20% off your first order.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Hope you're enjoying your Tuesday out there. It's a best of edition of Dirt and Sprague. They are down at Langdon Farms for the Fan Golf Classic. Schultzy sitting in with you until 10. Got a couple of other best of editions of some programming today. Of course, The Firm and Happy Hour and Primetime, all going to be at least airing, but the guys are out and you can go hang out with them if you paid to participate in the Fan Golf Classic. We really appreciate everybody selling out the morning and afternoon rounds. So a lot of people having fun with all of our fan personalities at the Fan Golf Classic today. And been saying it all morning, what a day for them to be gone. No Blazers news to report on. If we do hear some Blazers news, we will have Dirt and Sprague check in live from Langdon Farms. We have a way for them to just get on the show immediately if we so need to. And we are watching any possible Blazers news. Will there be a trade? Will they hire a head coach? They are the only team in the NBA that has not hired a freaking head coach yet. And, you know, after Tiago Splitter went to Chicago officially last week, saw a couple of reports that, oh, maybe beyond the Boston assistant and then Minnesota assistant Mike Inouye, beyond those two finalists, the Blazers might be re-expanding their coaching search. So who knows, man? Those finalist names, you always know that's not actually the Blazers putting that out. It's the agents of Mike and Dory. It's the agent of the Boston assistant. It's like, all right, we know you guys want everybody to know that, yeah, the Blazers are looking at him, but we really don't know exactly where they're going as their next head coach yet. So we're watching that. We're seeing hopefully some news that's going to be breaking today. Blazers fans, just like me, wanting to know who's going to be on the sidelines. I know a lot of people will disagree with me, but I still have hope that Terry Stotts will be hired. All right, that's my dark horse, especially with all this crazy stuff happened in the last couple of weeks with all the names being thrown out there, and now down to a couple of names. Oh, all of a sudden the search is re-expanding. So yeah, there's still a lot to talk about regarding the Blazers coaching search, and I know Dirt and Sprague and the rest of the guys will be back the rest of the week starting tomorrow talking about that. But of course, we are watching for any Blazers news. The Giannis trade did happen, and while the guys are down at Langdon Farms for the Fan Golf Classic, we've got a nice best of edition that we have prepared for you. Bill Connolly, ESPN college football writer, keeping with the college football theme, joined the guys recently. Let's hear what he had to say for the next couple of segments. Great takes from him on the upcoming season.
Let's bring him on now. Bill Connolly, our great friend, ESPN writer, the man behind SP Plus.
SEC Honk is what he is.
SEC Honk, Bill Connolly. That's what they call him on the streets, at ESPN underscore Bill C. There's rumors he's going to add an SEC in there.
Yeah,
we'll have to wait and see on that front. Bill, good morning to you. Did you ever think you'd live long enough to become just a diehard SEC ESPN shill?
Yeah, I mean, I think the number of negative things I've said about Greg Sankey through the years, you like to think that kind of gives you some clout, but every new thing you write is a new opportunity to be seen as the villain, I guess.
Did you think when you wrote the piece, because it's incredibly detailed, yes, and I enjoyed it, did you think when you wrote it and published it that the reaction that you would get from a vast majority of college football fans?
Well, I think, you know, it's my own fault for putting it on social media. If I just avoided that part, it would have been fine. I would have just lived in my little bubble. But yeah, once you put it out into the social media and you express an opinion, this is a time when that's not allowed to stand. Right. There will be pushback.
So let's get into it, Bill. So you put out a piece, and I love the like 2014 college football playoff is the AI of college football. We didn't ask for it. We're told it's inevitable despite huge unknowns.
Very well put, by the way.
Very well put, because it does seem like this is a train that's barreling down the tracks, and nobody can get out of the way. It's coming. And to your point, like online right now, and we do have this in a lot of regards in life, of like this is either the thing that is desperately needed in college football, according to some, and if you don't think so, you're an idiot or a shill for a conference, or it's the worst thing imaginable. Like, it just, there doesn't seem to be a lot of middle ground. So as you dove into this, what did you find, and what are the concerns, and why do you make the comparison to AI and what we're dealing with in real life right now?
Well, I mean, it's funny, for whatever reason, you know, for years we went by, as soon as 12 came out, as soon as we got a 12-team playoff, it was easy to assume that 16 was on the horizon, even though 12 has turned out to be a great number, even better than I really anticipated. And we didn't even see the best version of it back when, you know, we had a Pac-12 and a full five power. Well, sorry, Pac-12, that was a power conference, I guess I have to clarify. But, you know, when we had five power conferences, the whole six conference champions, six at large thing, that would have been even better than what we currently have. But it's still really good. It's a good cutoff. It flows nicely from the first round of the quarters and all that. So I've been really happy with it. I have still just been under the assumption that we're moving to 16 for a while, but every single time it looks like consensus is growing in that regard, we throw in some weird things like auto bids and, you know, Big Ten's going to get four. We're just going to turn the whole thing into an invitational kind of deal. And all those extra ideas have been terrible. And now we've moved on to the next big idea, which is 24 with no auto bids, I guess one spot reserved for the G5 or G6. And by the way, the number two team in the G6 is going to be 25th every single year from this point forward if we get this system. But that's, you know, this is, and now we've moved on to this, and it's pretty mind-blowing. And it is, as many negative things as I've said about Greg Sankey, as many negative things as I said in that piece talking about financial inequality and everything else, he's kind of the one. He's the one person kind of standing up to this right now, and hopefully he keeps doing so.
Well, we know Jim Phillips is all in. Notre Dame's AD is all in. We know Yormak is all in because, you know, these are going to benefit their conferences as well. But it feels like it's boiling down to Petitti versus Sankey. And I said this a couple shows ago, and I don't know if you agree with this or maybe I'm just not viewing it through the right lens. There's in a weird way, like that dude, it felt like anytime he talked, that was the gospel. The sport was basically being run because they had the 14 years in a row of winning the title, and they were largely always the favorites going into every season. And they still are looked at that way. But because you've had three straight title winners be from Petiti's conference, in a weird way, it feels like it's the old guard hanging on, fighting the new wave in a weird way. And I don't know if I'm misinterpreting that, but do you view this as like a Petiti versus Sankey, a power of the wills, and where would you lean of who's going to win this one ultimately?
Yeah, I think, it's certainly been a lot of that. And I don't know if that's been driven by the Big Ten winning titles or whether it's just Fox basically saying we want to have a bigger stake in the playoffs, so we need to grow the playoff or yeah, whatever it is, wherever that started. It's clear that, you know, a few years ago when Petiti was new, it was basically Sankey and Petiti having kind of a unified front where Sankey got to do all the talking. And now Petiti has kind of pushed himself out there a little bit and created a bunch of mostly terrible ideas. I got to say, I've hated basically all the ideas he's come up with, even though I'm not predestined to gravitate towards whatever Sankey says. I usually push back on Sankey the most, but I hated the auto bids idea. I guess the speed that this has taken on over the last few months has been the worst part to me, because playoffs never get smaller. This is how I ended the piece. Like, we never shrink playoffs in any sport, at any level, in any way. And if we're cut, like, if once we go to 24, it's always going to be 24. And we haven't even figured out how to pull off a 4-round playoff yet that doesn't end before Inauguration Day. And we're talking about ditching conference title games, which have been kind of like one of the main gravitational forces for the last 30 years. And we're doing that in part just to pay for a bigger, like, that's why we need a bigger playoff, because we're paying for getting rid of these other games. And it just seems like there are a lot of things we need to solve before we go to a 5th round. So yeah, even if 24 is inevitable, like, just, if you're going to expand, just go to 16, figure out the schedule, figure out what to do with conference titles. Cause I gotta say, I mean, you want to kill some of the drama of just kind of the home stretch of the season, you know, not having those title stakes. I realize playoff is the biggest thing in the world, but not having those title stakes and ended up with like 4-way ties in conferences or whatever takes away one of the sources of drama for most conferences. And that feels like a huge thing to me that we're just kind of glossing over in the name of a 5th round for a playoff.
Now, I want to say from the start of this, I'm more pro 16, and I just think 24 is going to happen. So I'm sitting as a sports fan who thinks it's inevitable, and we've been driving towards conference elimination or conference title games being eliminated, it feels like, for a couple seasons. My counter to you on that, because I think that's a very valid point. Lanning basically talked about this at the spring media days of, like, it's not going to kill the end of the regular season, at least for guys like him, because he's going to want the 1 seed. He's going to want the 2 seed, because when you get to 24, you're going to get an easier path than even you have in the 12. And the 12 has been incredibly difficult for the bye teams. The second thing I'd say is does it feel like outside of, I know Indiana did it, but you have a little bit of evidence too here where you play those conference title games and other teams get a break. And I don't know if it like really benefits, like, do fans really feel like there's a benefit to winning a conference championship and playing that extra game? Do Duck fans feel great? Like, that was a great season to go undefeated and win the Big Ten. And then they got absolutely pummeled by Ohio State, who didn't finish the season good. So I think I agree with your take, but I can see the other side of the argument of, are we benefited from it, basically?
Well, yeah, and I think basically, and the point I tried to make in there was that we don't hate conference championship. The conference championship itself isn't a drawback. It's the 13th game that's the drawback.
Yes.
You know, Carson Beck getting hurt in the SEC championship 2 years ago, Gunnar Stockton having to start in the playoffs. That is absolutely unfair. And the CFP committee obviously has no idea how to handle teams that lose in conference title games. Bama got destroyed and still got in. And so, to me, the issue isn't getting rid of title games. It's getting rid of the 13th game and making the title game the 12th game. And I think there are ways to do that. The Big Ten in 2020, just so I can point out that the Big Ten has had good ideas. Big Ten in 2020, when they came up with their idea of kind of that final flex week where the two division champions play, but then number two plays number two and three plays three, and you have a full week of games. I think that kind of shined a light on how this could work. The Pac-12's flex week idea for this coming season shines a light on how things could work. But it seems like, if you know, it's not a punishment to play for a conference title. And I think outside of like Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, and a few other fan bases, winning the conference title is a huge deal. Like obviously Indiana going on to win the national title is even bigger, but beating Ohio State in Indy was a humongous deal for them.
Yes.
Back when they didn't really know if they were going to win the national title or not. So I would say it's still a really big deal. I just think we can get a little creative here, pair everybody off for the last week of conference play and get to the playoff with everybody having played 12 games, but actually also having still had a conference title race.
That's Bill Connolly, ESPN college football writer, joining Dirt and Sprague on our Best of Edition for the Fan Golf Classic. The guys down at Langdon Farms, of course, still monitoring any news, anything happening with the Portland Trailblazers. We will break in to our Best of Dirt and Sprague, have the ability to join us live from the links, but no trades to announce yet, no Blazers coaching hire to announce yet. We are watching those lines. Promise you, we will let you know as soon as we hear anything. But we will continue this conversation they're having with Bill Connolly on this Best of Edition of Dirt and Sprague. Schultzy sitting in with you here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network.
Too often, green laundry detergents come with a compromise. They're better for the planet, but worse at the one thing that matters most: cleaning your clothes. Dirty Labs believes you shouldn't have to lower your standards for the sake of sustainability. Using advanced green chemistry, they created a detergent that uses an entirely new cleaning engine, inspired by the genius of nature. If Dirty Labs can't make you believe in the power of green cleaning, nothing will. Fall in love, or it's free, at dirtylabs.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, sports fans? A Best of Edition of Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. It's the Fan Golf Classic. That means all of our personalities are down at Langdon Farms. So we got a Best of Edition of all our shows here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Been saying it all morning. No Blazers news to report yet, but we will get the guys on if there happens to be something that breaks regarding a trade or the Blazers hiring a freaking head coach. The only team in the NBA still not to hire one. Although, you know, I'm not sure I'm as mad about that as maybe some other people. Of course, there's other coaches that are being snapped up, but I don't know how involved Tom Dundon is in the process. He did just win a Stanley Cup, you know, with Carolina Hurricanes. So he knows how to be successful, at least in one league. We'll see if that can translate to the NBA. But like I said, we are watching for any news regarding the Portland Trail Blazers all morning here on the Fan Sports Network. Let's get you back into this Best of segment, though, with Dirt and Sprague, talking to Bill Connolly, ESPN college football writer. And this interview, really, really funny, and helping preview the at least the next couple of seasons in college football and how maybe the college football playoff and our current bowl system as it exists now is going to go before it disappears. Take a listen.
We're talking with Bill Connolly, ESPN college football writer, SP Plus, at ESPN underscore Bill C on Twitter. You can go give him a follow there where he is posted, and be nice in the comments. Okay. Everybody's free to have whatever opinion they have, no matter what yours is, his thoughts on the 2014 college football playoff. Like, I don't really know where I land on this yet, Bill. I certainly understand both sides of the argument here. I'm terrified of what it does to, like, as an Oregon alum, I'm worried what it does to me as a fan in the regular season. Not that I'm just going to, oh, willy-nilly, yeah, they lost a game, who cares? But like the stretch run this year is a great example for Oregon, where they lose that game to Indiana. Then they had that closing stretch of Iowa, USC, and Washington. And there was a thought of like, man, if they lose one of these games, 10-2, we would have thought would have been an easy, like, oh, they're guaranteed in the playoff. And then Penn State cratered. Yeah. So it's like, what's their big win? So it's like there was a lot riding on every single week. And in a 2014 field, that's just not the case. Not that I'm okay losing games.
Yeah.
I've also heard the argument. I'm curious your thoughts on this. So I've seen people make the argument that back in the day in college football, I sound like a fuddy-duddy, like, for a lot of programs, 8-4 and 9-3 used to be, for some, a really good year. Like, you go 9-3, yeah, you get to a Outback Bowl or a Holiday Bowl or whatever it might be, and it's like everybody goes and plays in the game. A lot of fans travel to the game, and it's a send-off and a great way to end your season in a celebratory fashion, because we didn't have this playoff or bust mentality. And now like I'll use Virginia as an example. Virginia was in the ACC title game, I believe, right? I think they were in first place in the ACC.
Lost to Duke.
Right, yeah, they lose to Duke. I can't even tell you what bowl game they – I have no idea what bowl game they played in and who played in the bowl game, and I can't tell you at all. And it, had they been in a 2014 playoff, it's more of a fulfilling back end. So I'm just curious what your argument is to that of – it's certainly not going to benefit the biggest of the big in the sport, but does it benefit the others who used to have that pathway or an off-ramp to say, that was a good year, 8-4, let's go to the Outback Bowl, to now it's, hey, we went 8-4 and we made the college football playoff.
Well, as a Missouri guy, I can tell you that Virginia beat Missouri in a bowl.
There you go.
Don't ask me. Don't ask me what it was called. I watched the game. I don't remember which bowl it was. It really is. I mean, that's kind of the bowl situation right now.
Yeah.
It is. I absolutely see that point. And even, you know, when I was, anytime I find myself pushing against what might be seen by somebody as progress, or you know, siding with Greg Sankey, I step back. And I kind of test myself a little bit. Like, am I just being, you know, the old man yelling at cloud here, or am I actually, or do I feel like I still have a point? And so I went back through last year's rivalry week, you know, which would have been the playoff decider week. And absolutely, Virginia Tech would have been massive. That would have had added value for Virginia. They would have, they would have clinched the ACC title.
Right.
They would have been one of only three solo champions last year. We would have seen a fun field rush, assuming they didn't clam up against Virginia Tech like they proceeded to clam up against Duke the next week in the ACC title game. They would have won that game and rushed the field, and it would have been a great environment for them. Arizona would have beaten Arizona State and basically taken Arizona State's playoff bid. So that would have been fun. And so you enhance two games, but then Michigan loses by 18 to Ohio State and still gets in easily.
Right.
Alabama isn't in a win and you're in game against Auburn. They blow a big lead. They win. Fine. They're more likely to get a play. They might get a bye and they get a home game in the playoff anyway. Oklahoma doesn't have to beat LSU to clinch a spot. Vanderbilt and Texas are in, and there are really no stakes there whether they win or lose against Tennessee and Texas A&M.
Sure.
So we're basically enhancing two or three games and kind of devaluing five or six, and it just feels like that's, you know, all the things the critics said 10 years ago about a playoff will ruin this, it'll destroy the integrity of the regular season, all these things, they weren't right, and I said they weren't right. Starts to feel like they start to become right. You know, at some point there's a line there where the value we're adding for some takes away more value for other games, and it's tricky. I know that the playoff has absolutely created that kind of mentality of that's all that matters, and so we're just kind of skipping forward to the end, I guess, with a 24-teamer.
Yeah.
But it does, the excess value of a given regular season, I think, gets diminished by 24 in a way that it didn't even come close to being diminished with 12.
By the way, that's the Tax Slayer Gator Ball, Virginia, Missouri Bill. Come on now. And if we get the Pop-Tart.
Where Missouri walk-on quarterback almost completed a touchdown pass to a walk-on receiver on the final play of a game to win, yeah.
I mean, look, if the Pop-Tart Bowl becomes a playoff game, I'm not upset by that development. I love that Pop-Tart Bowl. Final one on this topic for me, because I really enjoyed the piece. I think it's very well thought out. You go through all the scenarios and different kind of narrative-based things. Also, we know why coaches are pro it. They all want to protect their jobs and never get fired. Like, I've been 9-3 every year. I'm making the playoffs.
5 years in a row in the playoffs, you can't fire me.
Come on now. What are we doing here? It sounds like what you said earlier, from the Oregon State, Pac-12, Group of Six point of view here, it sounds like you think that if they go to 24, they have less opportunity, to which I just watched two Group of Six schools make the 12 teams. Yeah. So I think for other schools like Oregon State and Boise State and all them, it feels like there might be more opportunity to have a couple more schools in this dance. You think that would not be the case if they expand to 24?
I don't have even 1% faith in the College Football Playoff Committee to make that happen. I think in the scenario that I was painting, I kind of laid out what the first, how a 24-teamer would have worked last year, and North Texas would have been number 24 after rivalry week. I can pretty much guarantee that that's Tennessee and not North Texas. The committee has, I have zero faith in the committee. So if we want to go to a formula, where these things are kind of decided on a more objective fashion, then I think that becomes a point in the favor of mid-majors in general. And honestly, I'm pretty easy. Like, if you give me every conference champion in the field, expand it to 28 if you have to do this, put every conference champion in the field and actually give some money to conferences that aren't the ACC or the Big Ten and SEC in terms of all this new money that the playoff has created. They hoard all of it.
Right.
So if we actually distribute it to everybody and let every conference champion in the field, suddenly I am the biggest expanded playoff proponent in existence, because that feels like a fair trade to me. But not stipulating that mid-major champions are going to get bids, I think it can be too easily manipulated in ways we've seen before. They've been manipulated out of higher rankings before, and I just don't have any faith that that would change here.
Yeah. Other than being on the take from Greg Sankey, how's your offseason going? You having a good offseason?
Oh, very soccer heavy, very soccer heavy. Going to, another U.S. friendly here shortly. So I'm going to be out of the football world for a little while with the World Cup. That doesn't seem like a terrible place to be right now. So, although it's one terrible world for another,
I guess.
I'll say if you can afford to be in that world.
Are you going to World Cup games, Bill?
I don't have my schedule yet, but yes. Okay. I don't know if it's 2 or 4 or 28 or whatever, but I will be at World Cup games at some point. We're on approval on that.
Random bone to throw at you then. We'll get you out on this one. From football to football, your shocking development news that Pep is leaving Man City after all of these years.
Well, it was the worst-kept secret in the world over the last year, but yeah, it is... I mean, he was an era definer in a way that very few coaches in any sport can be. The style he kind of implemented at Barcelona became the default rich team style for the next 20 years, basically, or almost 20 years. And so his impact is pretty wild, and he might go out as a Premier League champion if Arsenal blinks here at the end.
There you go. Great stuff. From football to football, one of our favorites, Bill Connolly, ESPN college football writer, SP Plus, ESPN underscore Bill C on Twitter. Go give him a follow, and his latest piece on the 2014 playoff is worth the read. No matter your opinion, you can find it on his Twitter account and at ESPN.com. Thanks for the time, Bill. I'm sure we'll catch up again at some point this offseason. Enjoy all the football in the meantime, and thanks as always for hopping on the show.
Absolutely. Take care.
There you go. Bill Connolly of ESPN. A lot of people in the comments not happy with old Bill Connolly because this has become a very divisive topic.
Well, Lanning talked about it. I thought Lanning, and look, I think we've made this opinion or given this opinion. All right. Lanning kind of echoed something we've said.
Yeah. So we'll tell you what Lanning had to say, because they're at the Big Ten Spring Media Days. He shared his sentiment. Ryan Day shared his sentiment. Now they're doing that because they're following the marching orders of their commissioner, who certainly wants this, or because they actually want it. That's a question for another day. But what did a couple of Big Ten coaches have to say about this? Also, one coach backing, or doubling down, I should say. The window is open. The time is now. Next on The Fam.
Yeah, we love our college sports, but they're a mess right now. I think that's what's become very obvious just talking, at least replaying those interviews with Greg Oden and now with Bill Connolly from ESPN, college football writer. Really on it there. Good stuff from him. All right, we got to get out to break. We are still monitoring if the Blazers do anything this morning as far as making a trade or hiring a head coach. We will let you know as soon as that happens, and get Dirt and Sprague live from the course. It's the Fan Golf Classic, so we got a best of edition of Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network.
You read labels on your food because what's in it matters. Dirty Labs brings that same thinking to your dishes. In other words, what touches your food matters too. Dirty Labs is proving that cleaning doesn't have to be so dirty. So they created a dishwasher detergent designed to deliver conventional levels of clean without the toxic chemicals or residue. Because the plates and forks your family eats from deserve the same care as the food you put on them. Fall in love, or it's free, at DirtyLabs.com.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast, chronicling the epic story of America, decade by decade, from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.